Queen Regent's chambers a few moments later. She knocked on the door politely, and one of the Queen's guard opened it from within a moment later.
"Sorceress,"
he said, nodding to her politely and stepping outside.
"Thank you,"
she said, stepping within. The Queen Regent was seated in a chair near her reading table, her hands folded in her lap. There was no one else inside the room as far as Lydia could see. Lydia closed the door behind her.
"You've done very well," the Queen Regent said. "With that ugly matter dealt with, I can finally have some peace of mind."
"Meaning your son can finally take the throne?"
Lydia guessed. The Queen Regent nodded.
"Precisely. Adon, well, Donovan, as I'm sure you know, approached my husband many years ago about working together to make our city glorious. Donovan wanted resources for his research and offered powerful sorcery, enough to make a claim at godhood, in exchange. My husband agreed. They had a strong partnership for a time, but my husband passed away a few years later, leaving me and an infant son behind.
And now that your son is old enough to rule, he posed a threat to Adon's control over the city,"
Lydia concluded.
"Yes. Adon has gradually been attempting to forge our city into a theocracy. When I was younger, I believed that being called a goddess of the city would help secure the faith of the people in my decisions. As the years have gone on, I realized that I was falling into a trap. By making myself a part of Adon's pantheon, I placed myself in an inferior position to him. His influence has been sufficient to delay my son's coronation for several months. I believe that he planned to use your friend, Talion, as a way to extend his influence even further,"
the Queen Regent explained. The court sorceress nodded.
"If the prince took the throne, Adon would have had to contend with a rival for power that was not a part of his divine hierarchy. I assume he probably offered divinity to your son and was refused?"
Tylin shook her head.
"No, Byron and Adon have never gotten along. Byron has always suspected that Adon was responsible for my husband's death, but I long ago concluded otherwise. Regardless, Adon never even made the offer. He knew what Byron's answer would have been. And so he needed an alternative, an excuse to keep control. Assassinating Byron might have been an option, but it could have sparked a civil war. When Talion arrived in the city, he saw an opportunity. Start a war with an outside force. With Velthrin and the followers of the Tales Pantheon,"
Lydia surmised.
"With a war raging, he could justify that Byron was too young and inexperienced to take control of the city."
While Lydia spoke that idea aloud, she had a second idea flowing through her mind. Adon seemed to sincerely believe that Byron was trying to have him killed. It was possible that the delay in the coronation was just an attempt to find proof that Byron had hired the assassins. If Adon had obtained that proof, he probably hoped to use that as evidence that the prince could not be trusted with leadership over the city. The so-called God of Ascension clearly had some other plan beyond just presenting evidence of Byron's wrongdoing, but even Myros seemingly hadn't known about the details. Lydia was deeply curious about what those plans were, but she doubted she'd have an opportunity to investigate them any time in the near future. Adon's plans for Talion were less certain in the sorceress's mind. There were several possibilities. While she had initially guessed that Adon wanted Talion to be imprisoned or killed in order to start a war, his more recent actions made that scenario less likely. It was possible that he was legitimately interested in having Talion as a member of his pantheon. Having the current wielder of the Sekhes working for him might have expanded Adon's personal influence and credibility. Making Talion one of his false gods might have even served to attract Taos followers into joining the Adonate religion. It was also possible that Adon simply wanted access to the Sekhes in order to expand his research into dominion marks. If Lydia's suspicions were correct, every artifact Adon gained access to expanded the variety of marks that Adon was able to create. Finally, it struck Lydia as plausible Adon just wanted more powerful supporters for his own protection. If Byron was sending assassins after him, Adon might have just wanted more people he could trust to defend him against further attempts.
"Yes, you averted that potential war very nicely, my dear, and that is why I brought you here. I know of your allegiances, of course. I would like you to return to Velthrin and assure your paladins and priests that the prince, soon to be king, wants nothing more than peace. The Taos religion will be legalized within our city again shortly, and Adon will be tried and convicted of conspiracy, kidnapping, treason, and probably murder," the queen concluded.
Lydia stepped forward, bringing her right hand across her chest to her left shoulder in a salute.
"I believe we have an accord."
The queen regent waved a hand to dismiss the sorceress.
"Good. I will look forward to hearing your organization's reply."
Chapter 17. The Next Steps. Talion still hurt in places he hadn't previously realized could experience pain. He remained mostly bedridden, but after the first day, which he had spent almost entirely unconscious, he began taking brief excursions out of the bed to stretch for a few agonizing minutes. The swordsman had been pleased when he had discovered the Sakes hiding beneath his sheets. He knew Lydia must have needed to argue with the doctors to let him keep it there, and he mentally thanked her for the kindness. Lydia and Jonan had kept a near-constant vigil over him for the first 3 days of his recovery, and visited frequently even thereafter. After the third day, Landon began to visit, explaining that he had tried earlier but that Lydia had sent him away.
"Paranoid girl, that one," Landon pointed out.
"You haven't even scraped the surface," Talion sighed. Landon grinned.
"Cute, though. And I think she likes you."
He shook his head. "I think it's more likely she's interested in a version of me that doesn't actually exist, if even that." Landon nodded sagely.
"You'll never know until you ask."
Talion had fewer visitors after the third day, when it grew progressively more obvious that he was going to survive his injuries. The doctor came in with fresh potions for him to drink and to check his stitches. And a servant with a harp-shaped earring came by with changes of clothes and to empty the chamber pot here and there, but the remainder of his next few days were an excruciating combination of boredom and restlessness.
"Every time I get injured, I remind myself not to let it happen again. Still, I remain reckless."
Lydia visited again on the fifth day, taking a seat by his bedside.
"Hey, what have I been missing?"
"Prince Byron is finally getting his coronation in a bit over a week. If you're back on your feet by that point, you can come along with me."
Talion shuddered deliberately.
"I'd better be. I don't think I'll be able to stand more than another day in this bed."
Lydia's warm grin shined down on him.
"I keep telling you to be patient. If you keep moving around all the time, you'll just tear your stitches and end up being here longer."
"Patience takes too long," Talion said dryly. "All right, the prince is going to be king. What's the situation with Adon?"
The sorceress shrugged.
"Largely out of my hands at this point. The queen is taking care of the investigation directly."
Talion quirked a brow. "And you're okay with that?" Lydia shook her head.
"No, but it's not a good time to push. We've had a significant victory, something that could lead toward a long-term peace between Velthrin and Orlen. I need to report back and work to stabilize that before doing anything else. You should come with me when I leave. I have a clue that might interest you."
Talion quirked a brow.
"A clue?"
Lydia reached into her ever-present pouch, retrieving the familiar glowing green stone that Talion had found inside the Paths of Ascension. The swordsman raised an eyebrow at the gem.
"I think there's a good chance it's a piece of Cessius," Lydia explained. "And after having thought about it, I think the Heartlands might be one too. I probably should have considered it sooner. If Cessius was broken or disassembled, a piece could easily look like another spear, or a gem that was inlaid somewhere in the weapon's shaft."
"That makes a certain amount of sense."
"Have you told—" He stopped himself from giving the other paladin's name, since he couldn't be certain they weren't being watched. "Anyone else?"
"Yes," she replied quickly. "And the people I talk to agree with my assessment, but they also will keep looking. In the meantime, I think your best route to gather more information would be to come with me to Velthrin, where we can analyze the gem. We might even be able to use the gem to track down other pieces of Cessius, which Taran might have in his possession."
"All right, I'll go with you,"
Talion sat up in his bed, turning to face Lydia. But first, tell me more about the Paladins of Taos.
Epilogue. Greetings and goodbyes.
5 days later, Jonan stood at the city gates. He had hoped to stay long enough for Adon's trial and the coronation, but reporting back to Sullir was a higher priority. He had finished his remaining business in the city, paid his informants for their assistance, and given his final report to his contact through one of his remaining mirrors. Knowing that his contact was the Queen Regent, he had briefly considered visiting her in person, but that would have violated his operational parameters. And besides, it was more fun keeping his identity a mystery. The Queen Regent had delivered on her side of the plan perfectly. Her appearance near the entrance to the Paths of Ascension couldn't have been better timed. He still wasn't certain why the Order of Valian had chosen to work with her in the first place, but she had certainly had proven to be efficient. In the distance, Jonan could see Talion and Lydia approaching, coming to see him off as they had promised. Talion's left arm and right shoulder were still wrapped in thick bandages, and he walked with a slight limp, but he otherwise seemed cheerful. Lydia was laughing at one of Talion's jokes, and Jonan felt a very brief pang of jealousy at the display.
Bah! I'll probably never see her again anyway.
He waved with his free hand as they approached, giving the pair as sincere of a smile as he could muster.
Hey!
Talion shouted as they came closer, closing the distance quickly and wrapping him in a hug. Jonan returned the embrace awkwardly, pulling away after a moment.
Hey, Jonan stammered. How's the arm doing?
Better, thanks, Talion said, stepping back to give Lydia room to approach.
Dare I test my luck?
Jonan extended his free hand and Lydia grasped it at the wrist, nodding professionally.
It was good working with you, she said. I hope you have a safe journey home.
Thanks, he said, pulling his hand back and adjusting his glasses.
He turned to Talion.
You know, you could still come with me and visit your family.
He shook his head.
Sounds fun, but Lydia has me convinced that Velthrin is going to treat me a little better than Orlan did. And I have to admit, I'm pretty curious if they'll be able to figure out why I have this thing.
He patted the sword on his hip meaningfully.
Oh, that reminds me.
Jonan set down his walking staff, undoing his belt and removing a scabbard that carried a long sword. He extended the sheathed weapon toward Talion.
This is the sword you dropped in the palace. I got a scabbard for it. Consider it a present.
Talion accepted the sword, holding it up to look at the hilt in the Dawnfire's light.
You sure you don't want to keep it? This thing might be valuable. I didn't even recognize the metal.
Jonan shrugged, refastening his belt.
It would just slow me down. I've got a long walk ahead of me, and I pack pretty heavily as it is.
He patted his backpack, which was practically overflowing with gear.
Fair enough, Talion replied. Thanks for the present. I'll owe you one. For next time I see you.
Next time.
Well, I suppose it's possible I might see you again. Your family does live nearby. Her, on the other hand...
Sounds good, he said, a hint of sadness dripping into his tone. He reached into a pouch on his side, retrieving a flat disc wrapped in cloth. And for you, Lydia, he said, offering it to her. Lydia quirked a brow.
You didn't have to get me something.
She accepted it, removing the cloth to reveal a fine hand mirror.
Ha! I'll make sure I get dressed in front of it every day.
Jonan laughed.
Good! I'll see you both soon enough.
Maintaining the illusion that disguised the Heartlands as a walking stick was a constant strain on his eyes, but nowhere near as difficult as what he had been forced to engage in over the last week. He felt a slight pang of regret that he hadn't managed to sneak away with that fascinating green gemstone as well, but he doubted it could possibly be as valuable as the spear he carried. Weeks passed in relative calm as Jonan made his way back towards Sullir. As he traveled, he and Lydia would occasionally send notes through their mirrors. He had little of import to tell her, but she gave him useful news. He read as he walked, drinking in Adon's notes eagerly for more clues about the strange language the sorcerer had utilized for casting his spells. Between scholarly notes, Jonan discovered many more personal passages.
At first, I thought that being robbed of my sorcery was a curse, a punishment from Cytira for daring to speak out against the isolation and selfishness of the Taos gods. In truth, retracting my sorceress abilities may have been the greatest gift she ever bestowed on me, if only accidentally. If she had never done so, I never would have heard the first whispers of divine power, relayed through the simple intuitive comprehension spell that I maintained at all times. The first months were a difficult period of adjustment, a frustrating attempt to wrench anything useful out of those few seemingly meaningless syllables. It was Mora that provided the inspiration I needed to study the fading echoes of my spell in earnest, and for that she will ever have my gratitude. Jonan fixated on those particular passages, considering their possible implications. He wished that Taylor had written the exact words that the spell had given to him, but if they were recorded anywhere, Jonan had yet to find them. Taylor lost the ability to use Dominion sorcery years ago and believed Cytira was responsible. But is that the most likely scenario? Cytira isn't known for having the ability to take Dominion sorcery away. Only the Vakes are supposed to be able to do that. Could one of them somehow be responsible for all this? Unsurprisingly, Donovan Taylor had been found guilty of several crimes. The only surprise was that murder was not among them. That particular crime could not be proven, not without the evidence that Jonan still carried. "They're going to keep him imprisoned," Jonan explained to his traveling companion, shaking his head.
"That's quite a risk," Vorain replied, turning her bright eyes to glance at his mirror for confirmation. "The new king is too soft."
Vorain still had scrapes and bruises from her confrontation with the strange black-haired girl, but had staunchly refused to tell Jonan exactly what happened after he had escaped. All he knew is that Vorain had somehow talked the other woman down, and that she had gone to check on her brother soon thereafter. Elias was still being cared for by Raymond Laurel, and Vorain apparently trusted the older man enough to leave her brother behind while she traveled for a few weeks. Jonan shrugged in response to Vorain's assertion.
"I think it's a political move. Adon was the foundation of a religion. Executing him would have been almost certain to cause his worshippers to take action."
"More likely than the riots he'll induce when he escapes and proclaims his innocence?"
The scribe waved his hand dismissively.
"It'll be hard for him to escape after he dies quietly in a cell."
Vorain quirked a brow.
"You think they're going to arrange for that?"
"It's what I'd do," he replied.
The memory of a helpless Asharan flashed in his mind.
"Well," she said, "we'll have to see if they're as brutally pragmatic as you are."
"They'd better be. He still has at least two allies out there that we never found," Jonan pointed out.
"Two? Morella and who else?"
Vorain asked.
"Varudin," Jonan replied. "From what Lydia tells me, Varudin was badly hurt when she last saw him, but we have no idea what sorts of abilities those strange runes might have given him."
Vorain folded her arms.
"Doesn't that mean they have enough information to keep doing what Adon was doing?"
Jonan shook his head.
"Maybe. Adon's notes imply that he relied on Morella heavily, so she might have known all the details of the process. That said, the whole kingdom is going to be looking out for them at this point. They might be able to start over somewhere else, but not in Orlin."
The pair continued their walk silently for a while, before Vorain stopped him by taking his hand.
"Do you really think your order can find a cure for my brother?"
She tried to stare into his eyes, but he turned his head away immediately.
"Hey, no need to use the eye tricks. I can't promise anything, but if anyone can help your brother, yeah. Valian is Orethri himself. Not that he's going to act on it personally, but I'm sure there would be a number of talented sorcerers who would be willing to look into it. Especially if I give them a chance to look at all this exciting research," Jonan offered.
She released his hand, taking a step away.
"Fine," she said simply. "I'm trusting you to take care of it personally," she added after a few more moments.
He nodded once, resuming his walk.
"Not a problem."
Weeks later, Jonan finally arrived in Salir. He rented two rooms at a local tavern, leaving Vorain behind in one of them, and then went to give his report. When he arrived at Fort Amber, the Order of Valian's local headquarters, he was quickly escorted to a private room to wait for a superior officer to arrive. The door closed, leaving him apparently alone in the dark. He sat down on a long bench, nervous that they might send one of the Thorn Guard to interrogate him. He waited for a handful of minutes, something itching at the back of his mind, before finally tapping the right side of his head. A woman was sitting next to him, idly inspecting the walls of the small chamber. Her hair was a sheet of molten gold, brighter than the golden trim on her crimson dress. She looked to be unarmed, but Jonan knew from years of experience that her lack of weaponry was utterly irrelevant. Instinctively, he slid an inch away from her. She whirled on him immediately, grinning broadly.
"You're getting slow, Jonan."
She poked him on the nose, still smiling broadly.
"So, how did it go?"
she asked, gathering her hands under her chin to stare at him.
"I was able to successfully orchestrate the downfall of the target, utilizing a paladin of Cytira and a swordsman as resources," he explained, attempting to keep himself calm.
Being near one of the Vaykas always made his skin crawl, and she was the worst of them. She could kill him as easily as she smiled. The woman steepled her fingers.
"And what were you able to ascertain about his identity and motives?"
The Sight Sorcerer set his hands on the bench, gripping tightly against the wood to ease his tension.
"As my initial reports indicated, I determined his identity to be Donovan Taylor, a former priest of Cytira. After being expelled from the priesthood, he traveled to Salia, at which point he was somehow robbed of his ability to cast Dominion sorcery. I don't know how..."
"Speculate,"
she instructed him, waving a hand. Jonan tightened his jaw.
"Donovan believed that his sorcery had been taken away by Cytira, who was punishing him for preaching that any mortal could ascend to godhood."
"And do you believe that?"
she inquired, her eyes fluttering.
"It's a possibility," he began, sensing her gaze weighing more heavily upon him. But he ignored a much more plausible explanation. "Salir is one of Valian's cities, and a Vaykas could have been responsible."
The woman grinned brightly at him.
"Continue."
"He felt it the moment his sorcery was taken from him. He didn't see or hear anyone, but he was under the effects of one of his spells, something called intuitive comprehension."
The Vaykas made a sound, tapping her fingers on the bench. "The spell identified the effect that was taking his sorcery, but the words it showed him initially appeared to be gibberish. He wrote them down, determined to learn how his sorcery had been stolen and reverse the process. He shared that information with a friend, a paladin of Cytira, and they worked together to attempt to find a solution."
"Difficult business, replacing lost sorcery,"
the Vaykas noted.
"Like trying to sew on a new limb."
Jonan nodded at that.
"The paladin of Cytira hadn't lost her sorceress abilities, which involved knowledge and memory. The pair of them speculated that if they could determine how his sorceress abilities had been removed, they could find a way to reverse the process, not only to give his sorcery back, but potentially to give them, or others, access to new types of sorcery."
The blonde-haired woman fidgeted in her seat, frowning.
"Is that all? I thought you were going to tell me something interesting, Jonan."
Jonan flinched.
"Well, he does seem to have eventually succeeded."
The Vaykas tilted her head to the side.
"How?"
Jonan adjusted his glasses, unsure of how much to say. If the Vaykas learned the secrets that Donovan had used, his chance of executing his own plans in the future would be drastically diminished.
"Two ways," the scribe began, scraping the necessary words together. "First, he was experimenting on Rethri, figuring out how to adapt their dominion bonds to make use of them on humans. He appears to have found a way to create dominion marks, like the ones found on some of the oldest known dominion-bonded objects."
"More interesting, but not entirely unprecedented. Continue."
"He also appeared to have created, or learned, some new kind of sorcery.
It involved speaking words in a language I was not familiar with in order to produce specific effects. I believe he was using artifacts as power sources for this type of sorcery, and as such, he was trying to get access to the Sakes,
Jonan explained, deliberately omitting several details.
Ooh, the Sakes,
she said, clapping her hands together.
Tell me more about that.
Jonan quirked a brow, uncertain.
A week or two ago, a swordsman entered the city carrying the Sakes Talion. He was immediately arrested and confined. I quickly learned about it from one of my contacts and went to investigate. He was rescued by a paladin of Cytira, who had been acting as a spy.
I found the pair and convinced them to help me work against Adon, he provided. The woman's expression soured. For an instant, Jonan considered his options for escape and deemed it impossible.
And who was this swordsman carrying the Sakes?
He just called himself Talion. His physical description matches the legends of the God of Swords almost perfectly,
Jonan reported hesitantly. The Vakes narrowed her eyes for a second, seeming to burrow into him, and then burst out into sudden laughter.
Talion! How fun!
She clasped her hands together.
Did you happen to get a sample of this new sorcery that Adon was using? Or perhaps one of the new Dominion marks he was making?
A sample of a Dominion mark?
Well, Riala almost undoubtedly has at least one, given the stories about her eye colors changing. At a minimum, her Dominion bond has been altered somehow.
No, my lady, he said, with the utmost hesitation. I did, however, witness him cast spells in that language, and I could write down the words he used,
he offered.
A few words probably won't be enough for her to do anything. I can't let her find the books. She might be able to figure out the whole language from them. And if my suspicions are correct, Adon was learning different words from studying different artifacts. If she discovered a way to use that type of sorcery with Hartigan's star...
Yes, do that. Thank you, Jonan. Now, where is the Heartlands?
He hadn't told anyone about the Heartlands.
It's in my room at the nearby tavern, he grudgingly admitted.
Oh, with that girl? Who is she, by the way?
The Vakes gave him what he imagined was intended to be a friendly nudge.
One of the fake gods, Jonan explained.
This just gets worse and worse.
Called herself Vorain in the city. I managed to turn her against Adon, and now I believe she will be a valuable resource for us. She said her real name is Riala Dianis.
The youthful-looking woman reeled back at that, visibly disturbed.
Riala Dianis?
No, her eye color is wrong, she muttered, probably more to herself than to him.
Jonan frowned.
How does she know Riala? I suppose House Dianis is famous, but I didn't realize she was personally all that well known.
I suppose she could have been lying about that, he offered. The Vakes leaned back toward him, forcing a bright grin.
Of course she was. You've told me everything you need to for the moment. You'll be well rewarded for going outside of your mission parameters to retrieve something so valuable.
She reported in a neutral tone. She leaned in close, whispering in his ear.
Bring it to me.
Yes, Lady Ayara.
Jonan returned to his room at the tavern in a near panic.
The situation is still salvageable, he told himself. I need to hand over the lance, but she didn't ask for the books. The books are the key.
He thought back to Donovan's research notes, remembering that even he hadn't been able to figure out the sorcery on his own. He had needed help from Morella, a former paladin of Cytira, presumably because the paladin had been able to use knowledge sorcery. Jonan shook his head, reaching into his pouch and retrieving a quill and inkwell and a bit of parchment. Setting the objects out on a nearby floor, Jonan began to write.
Dear Lydia, I've heard Velthrin is beautiful this time of year. When would be a good time for me to come and visit? Jonan.
This is the end of Book One, but the story continues with Stealing Sorcery, Book Two of The War of Broken Mirrors. Keep listening after the credits for a free preview. You have been listening to Forging Divinity, The War of Broken Mirrors, Book One, produced by Greg Lawrence.
Executive producers James Tawn and Greg Lawrence. Text copyright 2015 by Andrew Rowe. Production copyright 2016 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved.
Prologue. Jonan, Heartlands. The evening chill was Jonan's only company as he traversed the unfamiliar streets of Velthrin. The map burned into his memories had proven accurate thus far, but uncertainty always weighed heavily on his shoulders during clandestine operations. He had arrived in the city only hours before, but his orders had insisted upon haste. Upon reaching the gates, he had briefly considered delaying his report until after he had slept for a few hours, but Symphony would have discovered his lapse. She always did. Upon catching sight of his destination, the sorcerer retreated into a nearby alley, pressing two fingers from his left hand to his forehead in the Valerian sign for safety. Among the Thorn Guard and their allies, it was used as a signal meaning, "I am safe," or "I can be trusted." To an outsider, he would have immediately vanished from sight, although he retained the ability to perceive his own body. The gesture was a nervous habit. He had long ago learned to hide his image without strictly needing to resort to gestures or words. His vision was already poor, so he barely noticed when the spell extracted its cost. Sight sorcery was among the least obtrusive forms of sorcery. Vision was a small price to pay for the freedom that his skills provided. With his spell in effect, Jonan moved toward the building, a towering three-story housing complex with the dubious distinction of standing next to the local Perfect Stranger Tavern. Such establishments were frequently used as fronts for the Thieves Guild of Valeria, an organization with deep ties to his own. Arranging for a room there would have been easy given his connections, but he disliked the idea of finding housing so close to his rendezvous point. His contact could most likely discover where he stayed regardless of the location, but he liked to have at least some pretense of security. Invisibly opening doors often attracted undue attention, so Jonan chose the more awkward route of making his ascent via a series of stairs on the outside of the building designed to be a fire escape. At the top of the final stairway was a ladder that led the rest of the way to the roof. Gripping the rungs while holding his staff proved difficult, but after a few moments of awkwardness, he approached the roof. A figure enshrouded in shimmering cloth loomed over him from above, reaching down with a hand. Her body had feminine curves, but any details were washed away by the voluminous sashes that draped her form. Jonan grit his teeth and accepted the hand. He was pulled to the roof in a disorienting instant, after which he took a breath and steadied himself, planting his staff on the flat stone rooftop.
"Loyalty is like a crystal sword,"
came a feminine voice from within the layers of fabric.
"Sharp and beautiful, but easily shattered," Jonan finished the phrase as he had been instructed. He barely managed to restrain himself from rolling his eyes. Ayara's methods were effective, but often bordered on the theatrical.
"Not bad," the enshrouded figure mused. "I can't see you at all. What do they call you? Stealth, maybe?"
He scratched his head, giving a sheepish grin, only realizing a moment later that she wouldn't be able to see it. "The scribe, actually." With a thought, he let his invisibility fade. Maintaining the spell wasn't particularly taxing, but now that he had reached his destination, he didn't see any point to it.
"Your silk, I take it?"
"No,"
came a deep voice, echoing from behind him.
"I am."
Jonan spun, finding nothing behind him. And then the figure gave an unladylike snort of amusement.
"I've always wanted to do that. You should have seen your face."
Jonan sighed, turning back around.
"Sound sorcery? I suppose I should have expected that."
Silk gave a melodious laugh that echoed much like her false voice had.
"Maybe, but it was more fun for me this way. I haven't had a partner to practice with for months."
He frowned.
"I'm afraid I'm just here for a delivery."
Silk folded her arms and tilted her head to the side.
"A delivery? And no new orders then?"
Jonan shook his head.
"No, but I've been told I can make use of you if I need to."
Make use of me?
There was a hint of amusement in her voice.
I suppose there might be some entertainment after all. So what kind of present did you bring me?
Jonan extended his hand, holding the quarterstaff. There was no longer any sight sorcery concealing the weapon within. Instead, an actual branch had been hollowed out, and the metallic core was concealed inside and held in place with an adhesive. Someone holding it might notice the staff's unusual weight, but the camouflage worked well against a casual glance, at least. Silk tilted her head to the side, dubiously for a moment, then snatched the staff out of his hands.
Oh,
she mumbled, turning the weapon over in her hands.
This will do.
That's a bit of an understatement. What will you do with it?
That,
she replied.
You'll find out very, very soon.
Chapter 1 Velis 1 Just a Small Favor. Velis Jaldin strode through the halls of the Citadel of Blades with her back straight and her head held high. She had long ago learned to conceal her anxiety behind layers of outward walls. In this case, professionalism was her first line of defense.
You sure you want to do this?
Landon was walking in pace with her, a couple steps to her right. His incessant worrying over her was endearing at times, irritating at others. This was one of the latter cases, but she wouldn't let that show. There could be no cracks in her mask when so much was at stake. She glanced at him, beaming a smile in his direction.
No worries, Lan. It's just Lydia.
Her companion twisted his lips.
Right. Just Lydia.
Velis chuckled as she continued to walk.
Poor Lan. Still swooning over sorceresses. He never changes.
The Citadel of Blades was the central structure for the Keldrian Crossing Holy Grounds, a parcel of land that had been owned by the priesthood of Teos for centuries. As the priesthood expanded and developed a military branch, the Paladins of Teos, the Holy Grounds, had shifted from its initial purpose as a center of worship into a permanent military base. The Citadel of Blades itself was now one part temple, one part fortress, and about five parts administrative center. Ringed with dozens of other buildings, the Citadel housed the offices of most of the officers of the Paladins of Teos. The newly promoted Major Lydia Hastings among them. It had been 8 months since Lydia had discredited Adon, the leader of the supposed gods of the city of Orlan. 8 months since Prince Byron had been crowned King of Orlan. And 8 months since Velis and Landon had been relieved from the Queen's Guard. Normally, she would have expected to transition directly into being a member of the new Kingsguard, but Byron did not trust that anyone who had served his mother would be loyal to him above her. Frankly, he had probably been right. It had been Landon's idea to chase Lydia's skirt all the way back to her home in Velthrin. She had rolled her eyes at the idea outwardly, but she had agreed, not just to support her friend, but also because she had business of her own to pursue in Velthrin, business that was long overdue. They had arrived in Velthrin just under 6 months ago and immediately met with Lydia to discuss the possibility of joining the Paladins of Teos. She pushed the errant thought from her mind, arriving at Lydia's door. She didn't know the Paladin particularly well, but they had met a few times in Orlan and several more since coming to Velthrin. It had, of course, been Landon's idea to offer to join the Paladins of Teos. Velis thought they were hideously overqualified to sign up as fresh recruits, but fortunately, the Paladins apparently had plenty of other applicants with prior experience as soldiers, mercenaries, and even members of other military orders. People like Landon and herself were given the option to participate in an accelerated training program, culminating in a series of proficiency tests to see if they were a match for any of the 7 suborders. The training had been tedious, but relatively easy by her standards. The hardest parts were the history lessons. They were boring and completely impractical as far as she was concerned. The combat training, on the other hand? Now that was fun. Velis glanced over at Landon, who just shrugged unhelpfully at her and knocked on Lydia's door.
The exasperated sigh that came from the other side was loud enough that she could have heard it easily, even without her own particular talents.
"Come in!"
Velis turned the knob, giving one last look to her brown-haired companion, who leaned up against a nearby wall. He was trying to look natural. It was half surprising that he had even accompanied her this far, given his reservations about her plan. Velis opened the door, stepped in, and closed the door behind her. Afterward, she turned to see Lydia sitting at a desk stacked with an implausible number of papers. The paladin leaned against her left hand, rubbing her temple. Her right hand rested on the table, her fingers blackened with ink and grasped around a quill. The former Queen's Guard wasn't wearing a sword, so she simply raised her right hand to her chest as a salute. Lydia sat up a little straighter, abandoning her quill to mirror the gesture.
"At ease, Velis. What can I help you with?"
Velis relaxed her stance a bit, taking a moment to look Lydia over. Several errant threads of crimson hair had slipped out of Lydia's traditional bun, and her spectacles served to magnify the bags under her eyes. Nevertheless, her uniform was immaculate.
"Was hoping you could do me a favor. You got a few?"
Lydia nodded sleepily, standing and retrieving a rag from a nearby shelf. She wrapped the rag around her ink-stained hand, and the black liquid seeping into the cloth reminded Velis of binding a wound.
"I could use a break from all this paperwork. Apparently coming home a hero makes you uniquely qualified to be a secretary. Who knew?"
Velis frowned in something she hoped resembled sympathy.
"Sorry, Lydia. Anything I can help with?"
She didn't want to help Lydia with anything, but she was also pretty sure Lydia wouldn't agree.
"Actually, shit. Platitude gamble failed. I saw something on your application about sorcery resistance. That's intriguing. What did you mean?" "Oh, that. Got a knack for shaking off anything that tries to get into my head. Always had it, far as I can tell. My aunt figured it out when she was trying to teach me something. Had me try it with a bunch of people."
Lydia finished wiping off her hand, setting the blackened cloth down on a far corner of the table.
"I'd like to see that. Oh, well, that's not so bad."
She never minded a good chance to show off.
"Okay, Red, hit me with whatever you've got." "You'd better sit down first."
Lydia pointed to a chair on the side of the desk near the entrance. She had a mischievous glint in her eyes, which Velis had to admit was kind of cute.
Maybe Landon's taste isn't complete rash after all.
Velis sat down, folding her arms behind her head.
"What's on the bombardment agenda?"
Lydia sauntered up to her, put a finger on her bicep, and said,
"Sleep."
Velis's eyes closed. Purple threads appeared in her mind, spreading through the veins at the point of contact in her arm to spread throughout her body. Velis felt a momentary chill as she pulled on the threads with her mind, siphoning them away from her arm and into a central point in her right hand.
"Expel."
She silently commanded the threads, envisioning them surging out her fingertips into the empty air. The chill faded, and Velis opened her eyes, grinning.
"Gotta do better than that, Red, unless your spell was meant to knock me out for about 10 seconds.
Lydia frowned, shaking her head.
"I'm afraid you've been asleep for several hours, Velis."
Velis blinked, opening her mouth and then closing it again as words failed to emerge. The faintest hint of a smile crept its way to Lydia's lips. The former Queen's Guard narrowed her eyes at Lydia and then burst out laughing.
"Okay, that was pretty good. You actually had me there for a second, and I'll tell you, that's not easy to do." "I know, it was a rare opportunity, so I had to take it. Your ability is extraordinary. How did you do that?"
Velis scoffed.
"After you pulled that little trick on me? Forget it. You can keep guessing. It's a trade secret."
The paladin rolled her eyes.
"Fine. I'll figure it out one way or another. Now, what brings you to my secluded cavern?" "Oh, that." "Put my preferred team on my application, which, given that you just grilled me about my talents, you've already read."
Lydia nodded, leaning back against her desk, a hint of exhaustion returning to her expression.
"Yeah. You want me to make sure you're placed with your friends, I take it?"
Velis nodded.
"Easy enough. Anything else?" "Really? That's it?" "Was expecting you to require convincing."
The paladin shrugged.
It's hardly a surprising request. Anyone with connections is going to try to utilize them. I'm a Cytiran. Pre-planning for your success is something I encourage. Besides that, it's not like there are many local candidates this year. Putting you with two other heavy melee fighters makes perfect sense. Although I was somewhat tempted to pair you and Landon with Keldon Andis. That guy? He's all flash. Granted, he's got a lot of flash, but you take his trick away and there's no substance beneath.
Lydia raised an eyebrow.
I have it on good authority he was an accomplished swordsman even before he earned his gifts. But if you've got that strong of an opinion about him, maybe I should put him on your team. You might both learn a few things from each other.
You're kidding! What am I going to learn from him? Arrogance and condescension? I'd rather take those lessons from Solaris. At least he can back it up.
Fine, fine. But you're going to have to train with some people outside of your own little circle. The three of you will be slotted into a larger platoon, and I don't expect you to ignore the rest of the platoon in favor of each other. From what I hear, some of the foreign candidates might even be a match for you or Landon in a duel.
Velis smirked.
Good. Give me the best of them. Unless we're fighting the other platoons, in which case, give me some raw material to work with. I could use a challenge.
Don't worry, Velis. We'll make sure you're more than adequately challenged.
If you're putting me on a team with Lan and Solaris, I sincerely doubt that. Unless these other applicants are legendary heroes and demigods, I'll wager we're going to come out on top.
Velis felt the knock before she heard it. She deliberately slowed her reaction. Turning too fast could be startling to others. The door swung open before Lydia even had a chance to respond. A younger paladin was standing at the entrance, his forehead drenched with sweat, his breath ragged. He barely managed to raise his hand into a salute before beginning to speak.
Major Hastings, please, come with me. There's been an incident.
An incident? What the rush does that mean?
What happened? Lydia stood up straight, adjusting her sword belt.
Alstheus, there's been an assassination attempt.
Lydia pushed past Velis and broke into a run. Chapter 2 Lydia 1 A Taste of Poison. Lydia shoved her way through the heavy doors to House Theus's manor, racing down the halls toward the fevered sounds of Aladir's incantations.
Let Lysaria's light live within your body, and let the spark of her love...
Gods and monsters, he's casting a spark of life. The victim must be...
Her steps carried her faster, ignoring the startled looks of servants and the numerous signs of wealth that lined the building's floors and walls.
Renew you, and let your heart beat once again.
A flash of green illuminated a distant hall, and Aladir's voice rose again.
Let Lysaria's light live within your body!
Lydia came into view of her companion, sitting with a corpse laid across his lap, a pool of blood beneath the pair. Not all of it belonged to the victim.
Aladir, stop!
Lydia commanded, only noticing the other figures standing nearby a moment later. The two women watching over Aladir were similar in visage, albeit separated by many years, but their demeanor could not have been more distinct. The elder woman had been shattered by panic and anguish, her makeup smeared by freely flowing tears. In another circumstance, she might have been quite beautiful. In this, her image was that of grief itself. The younger stared downward at Aladir and the deceased man with a hawkish glare, scrutinizing with a mixture of inquisitiveness and anger.
And let the spark of her love...
Lydia ignored both of the women, grabbing Aladir's hand and pulling it away from the dead man's torso. Aladir raised his head, seeming to notice Lydia for the first time. The Rethri's once brilliant green eyes were the dullest she had ever seen them, and a stream of blood ran from his nose down his chin.
Aladir, you need to stop. It's too late for him, and you're going to kill yourself if you continue.
She wiped a line of blood out from under his nose, showing it to the Rethri to emphasize her point.
The healer will stop when I tell him to.
The tear-stained woman hugged herself, shivering as she spoke.
If he dies, at least it will even the scales.
The younger woman, just a teenager, Lydia realized at a second glance, turned to the elder, folding her arms.
I told you it was too late, Mother. Putting another grave beside Kay's will not comfort his spirit.
The mother took a step closer to her daughter, raising her hand.
and then her eyes narrowed as she spun on her heels, retreating from the room. Left alone with Lydia and Aladir, the younger girl knelt down, putting a hand on the victim's forehead.
Kay was always fragile,
the girl explained, moving her fingers to close the deceased man's eyes.
Father sheltered him, pampered him, as the eldest and the boy. He was the only heir.
The girl moved her fingers to the man's hair, straightening it with careful motions. She moved her gaze upward to Lydia.
He will be furious when he returns. You are the other paladin, yes?
Lydia nodded.
My name is Nakane Theus. My brother was fragile, yes, but not fatally so. He seemed so happy this morning. He just wanted a breath of fresh air. And then when he pricked his finger on that thorn, no, a single wound would not kill a man. Not even poor Kay.
I tried to save him,
Aladir muttered, his voice weak.
I tried everything.
Your everything, it would seem, was insufficient, Nakane replied. But you can still be useful. You both can, in fact. You think your brother was murdered?
Lydia surmised, glancing around the room. Nakane tilted her head down, giving Lydia a cold look.
Oh, I am certain my brother was murdered. The only questions are who and how. Not why? I suppose there are some obvious potential motives. The man was Edric Theus's son, after all.
Edric Theus was among the most famous sorcerers on the continent, and one of the few publicly known for having found a method to extend his life. He was certain to have many enemies, both among the inherently long-lived Rethri, who might fear a human with a lifespan comparable to their own, and other scholars that were envious of his discoveries. Lydia stood up.
I'm going to look around. Aladir, can you stand up and come with me?
The man nodded weakly, pausing for a moment to set the body gently on the ground.
May Lysari guide your spirit to its rest,
the Rethri muttered, bringing a blood-stained fist to his heart.
May Lysari guide your spirit to its rest,
Lydia echoed, closing her eyes. When she opened them, she found Aladir and Nakane standing, both looking at her expectantly.
You should wait with your brother,
Lydia instructed the young woman, who quirked an eyebrow in reply.
Why? He's dead. He's not going to get any less comfortable. I just thought it would be respectful.
The younger woman shook her head at Lydia.
I don't think you fully comprehend the situation. When my father hears of this, someone, possibly several someones, are going to find their heads separated from their bodies. Unless, of course, we find and deal with the culprit before he returns.
She folded her hands together in front of her.
Surely, as an agent of justice, you would rather handle this matter expediently and cleanly. That's a strange way to react to the death of your brother, but I suppose she's not wrong. If my brother died...
She shook her head, dismissing the thought before it could progress any further.
All right, fine. First, can you give me any more details on what happened? When your servant arrived at the Citadel, all he said was to come quickly because your brother had been badly injured.
Nakane disentangled her hands, raising one of them to her chin.
Well, Kay had just gotten out of bed, and he was in such a golden mood. Normally we would have spent much of the day reading, but it was lovely outside. He wanted to feel the dawnfire's rays on his skin.
The young woman paused, sealing her eyes shut.
I'm not giving you anything useful. She took a deep breath. He pricked his finger on a plant. We should start there. Just a moment. Before we do that,
Lydia leaned down, putting a hand against the dead man's skin.
Dominion of knowledge, I invoke you.
Dominion of life, dominion of poison, dominion of water, dominion of protection. The words that appeared in her mind were unsurprising, but she grit her teeth nonetheless. Poison. Aladir's attempts at using life sorcery would have been useless. In fact, depending on the type of poison, they may have expedited the victim's death by spreading the poison faster. Water sorcery was better for treating poison, but if that had been Aladir's work, it hadn't been strong enough to neutralize the toxin. Lydia decided to omit telling Aladir that the life spells may have worsened the victim's situation. The Rethri Paladin was undoubtedly suffering enough. She could reveal that information later if necessary.
What are you seeing?
Aladir tilted his head downward, brushing an errant lock of hair out of his eyes.
jarred out of her introspection. Lydia hesitated for a moment before answering.
Evidence of the healing attempts. He also has an aura of protection sorcery.
Nakane pointed to the ring on her brother's hand.
His signet. Father makes them for us. They protect against physical attacks and direct sorceress attacks.
Lydia nodded.
It probably works similarly to my shield spells, then. That would imply the poison was administered through something the ring wouldn't stop. Ingesting food, perhaps? Or contact with an everyday object coated with a toxin?
The female paladin stood, glancing around the room.
Dominion of knowledge! Illuminate your sources!
Green auras manifested around Aladir and Nakane. Neither was surprising. She had known Aladir's sorceress capabilities, and a daughter of House Theus being a sorcerer was hardly unexpected. The glowing trail across the room's white-tiled floor was somewhat startling, however. She reached up to adjust her glasses, deliberately extending the spell beyond the moment it normally lasted. Inspecting the boy, Lydia noted a light glow around the ring Nakane had mentioned. There was no evidence of other enchanted items on his person. She looked away, turning her gaze back to the sorceress path.
There's something odd here.
Lydia could not detect the form of sorcery in the glowing path she saw without casting another spell, but it was intense enough that she could discern the direction that it led.
An aura of sorcery that does not belong. We can investigate the flower you mentioned in a moment, Nakane, but I need to follow this.
Lydia moved toward the source of the aura, and as she drew closer, she was able to distinguish more detail. The path consisted of glowing footprints with additional splotches of green like droplets of paint falling beside them. She knelt down for a moment, hearing Aladir and Nakane following quietly behind her. She measured the size of the footprint, more accurately, a boot print, she realized, and decided it belonged to a large man. A backward glance showed that both Aladir and the corpse of Kay Theus were wearing shoes. Probably not their trails, then. Sorceress auras normally faded quickly. She had never seen footprints leave a mark of this kind. The level of power it would have taken to mark the floor with every step was staggering, and she briefly debated methods by which it could be accomplished.
Deliberately dipping one's boots in dominion essence doesn't sound like a very likely tactic, but I don't like the idea of something powerful enough to leave this kind of trail on its own.
The trail led in two directions, and she followed it first to the left. The path led up a circular stairway draped with red carpet and past a series of paintings, one of which seemed to depict a younger version of the murder victim, a bright smile on his pale face. They arrived at a closed door shortly thereafter.
My brother's bedroom,
Nakane explained.
What are we doing here? I'm following a trail of sorceress energy that is visible to me,
Lydia explained, only realizing in that moment that she had failed to provide the others with any information. Aladir slumped against a wall, using a sleeve to brush blood off his face, and Lydia gave him a concerned look.
I'll be fine, he insisted. Find the bastard that did this.
Lydia nodded, opening the door to the room. The bedroom was surprisingly plain for the residence of the heir to a famous noble house.
A moderate-sized bed with immaculate covers. There's a small desk near the wall with a glass of water on it, half-consumed. Opposite the bed there's a bookshelf and a table. At the table, a chair tucked in.
The room's large window was open, and the light that streamed inside somewhat obscured the glow from the trail. After a moment, she discerned that there were footsteps leading to two places, the bedside table and the open window. And the liquid in the cup next to the bed was glowing.
Touching the cup should be sufficient for this, given the strength of the aura.
Lydia moved beside the bed, touched the glass, and incanted again.
Dominion of knowledge, I invoke you. Dominion of poison.
She winced, in spite of the words providing exactly what she had anticipated. She turned to the others, noticing that her concentration had failed as she processed the latest spell, and the trail faded from her view.
There's poison in the water.
Lydia raised a hand to indicate a glass. Nakane let out a low hiss.
Poison is a coward's tool. Exactly the sort of thing Hardigan would use.
Hardigan. Blake Hardigan. Edric Theus's rival. The pair argued sorceress theory and philosophy in every possible format. Letters, books, and even public gatherings. While Theus was primarily famous for defensive sorcery,
Hartigan was the city's foremost expert on flame sorcery, one of the deadliest dominions for attack spells. Like Edric, Hartigan was one of the few sorcerers who had discovered a method of prolonging his lifespan. Aside from